and welcome back to Success Made Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. This show is brought to you by Edward Jones Financial Advisors. Today's special guest is Paul Fox. Paul was the former VP of Communications with Procter & Gamble. A former journalist, Paul entered the world of government public relations during the 1980s, later joining a major UK airline as the head of public relations and public affairs. He then ran three successful PR firms in Europe before moving to the United States in the 1990s, where he provided strategic communications counsel to many Fortune 500 companies. Then he joined Gillette Company in 2000 and was the director of global external relations for the company before it was acquired by P&G in 2005. And then he started climbing the corporate ladder and eventually became P&G's Vice President of Strategic Initiatives in 2016. Paul, it's a pleasure and honor to have you on Success Made to Last. Welcome.
Rick, it's just great to be able to join you. Thank you.
You bet. Hey, there's so much inside your career journey and background that I didn't cover. Fill in the gaps for our listening audience.
Well, you know, listening to you sort of read that list out, I'm sort of shocked on the journey that I actually took. I mean, how can you do that much? How can you do that much? Well, frankly, I don't feel that old, right? But, you know, But, you know, when I look back, you know, when I finished my education, I wanted to be a teacher. And, you know, let's fast forward, you know, 40 plus years now. And, you know, when I look at it, my career has gone full circle. Because here I am, you know, I finished my education, wanted to be a teacher. I come from a long line of teachers. So it was a sort of a natural, almost no-brainer, right? That's what I was going to do. But, you know, my lecturers insisted that, you know, there's a lot more to the world than simply teaching. And they felt that, you know, my real potential probably lay somewhere outside that. And besides which, you know, this was, you know, the 1970s in Britain, and there was a huge amount of industrial unrest. There seemed to be, you know, a strike every single week, whether it was the power workers or, you know, the police or the teachers. Everybody seemed to be on strike every week. And with that sort of advice ringing in my ears, you know, I just felt that, you know, my calling, my vocation was communication. I thought it was in the classroom. But with that advice ringing in my ears, I became a journalist. And that's where I started. And I have to say that even after all these years, you know, I have such a strong affection for and bonding with the world of journalism and writing. It's never left me. But, you know, that's where I started. I started off in newspapers. I did broadcast for a while. And then I guess I went from I'm never quite sure, Rick, whether I went from poacher to gamekeeper or gamekeeper to poacher, right? Because I moved from journalism into the world of government public relations. And I could tell you, I learned so much when I crossed that line about how communications can make such a remarkable difference in the way that people understand issues. And that was within government. And then from there, I went on, as you mentioned, to become head of public affairs and public relations for a very large airline. And from there, I went on to run three consultancies. And after doing that, America begged me, and I was very, very fortunate to come here to the United States initially to help a computer company called Unisys out on the East Coast. They were based in Philadelphia. They had a new CEO, and he was looking to try and get the divisions of Unisys to play nicely together. And then I came across and helped him. Then I became vice president of Chandwick on the East Coast here. And as you say, in 2000, I got a call saying, would I be interested in joining a large blue chip consumer company based in Boston. Right? And I said, I didn't realize Gillette were hiring. And they said, well, we can't tell you that it is Gillette. And I said, well, there is only one blue chip large consumer company in Boston, and that is the Gillette company. So in sort of romantic fashion, on Valentine's Day 2000, I joined Gillette and flew to Gillette's international headquarters, which were in London, to begin running their international communications out of London. And the rest sort of is history. You know, in 2005, P&G began its acquisition of Gillette. A.G. Lafley, who was CEO at the time, I was invited to come to Cincinnati when the deal was closed, initially to lead communications for global operations, and then took over corporate communications around 2006, 2007. And yeah, you know, those years at Gillette and P&G were really quite remarkable, you know. And in 2017, I quote-unquote retired, right? Which is why I've gone full circle, because there I was, you know, finishing my education all those years back, intent on becoming a teacher. And here I am in 2020, part of the faculty at Xavier University here in Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky University. And I was honored in 2015 to be recognized as a visiting fellow and offered a visiting fellowship at the University of Oxford in England. So I really split my time now teaching at Xavier, Northern Kentucky, and at Oxford. I love it, right? It really is. I was right, Rick, all those years back. I was right that this is what I really wanted to do. And here I am doing it. So I could not be happier. I could not be happier, truly.
What a great journey. I think it's beautiful how things come full circle and how all your years of experience now can be told through stories in the classroom, and people and the next generation can take it and make it their own and become their own best version. So I just think it's fantastic the way that has worked out for you and the people that you've been around from Procter & Gamble, I would think have helped shape you, but other people in your lives like teachers have as well. So I want you to share with our listening audience maybe a few stories about those mentors that helped influence and shape the best version of Paul Fox.
It's really difficult, Rick. You know, it's such a difficult question that when you look back, because I think I have been incredibly fortunate to work alongside and work with some really outstanding men and women, right, in many, many different fields. And, you know, when you sit back and think, well, you know, out of all of those, which ones were the most influential? That really is such a struggle to really pin one down. But, you know, I think, you know, when I look back, and this is not in any sort of chronological order, but my first editor, was a gentleman called Brian Mason in England. And he was such an outstanding journalist. Brian unfortunately passed away way too early a few years back. But, you know, Brian was, as I said, my first editor, and he truly believed in the truth, right? And the role that journalists play to cast light where perhaps darkness would be preferred, if I can describe it that way. He really believed in the truth. He believed not in a version of it, but in the unvarnished truth, right? Whether it was unpleasant or not, he believed that the truth should out, and he believed in unbiased reporting. And I know, you know, in 2020, the whole question about fake news and, you know, what do we believe seems to be on everybody's lips these days. But back then, you know, he was such an inspiration and truly empowered us as journalists to go out and tell people's stories. You know, and I remember back then, I you know, like many great stories, you know, you almost stumble over them, right? And I can remember back then there was really a very painful trend occurring, which was infant mortality. And a lot of babies were dying for no apparent reason. And I discovered this trend and went off to try and understand why that was. And Brian at the time, you know, obviously he was curious, right? But, you know, even for a very young reporter as I was at the time, he really empowered me to go off and find out what was happening, Paul, and we'll tell the story, which we did, right? And I interviewed many, many women to examine those tragedies that they'd gone through, right? The causes, I spoke to a lot of medical people at the time, examined the guilt that a lot of people felt, right, about losing a child, and really expose what was then a woeful lack of support that was shown to many, many, many grieving mothers. And I think it really made a difference. And, you know, when I look back, you know, this unswerving view that Brian had of, you know, just make sure that you get to the truth, that has lived with me, Rick, for my entire life now. So, you know, I owe him such a debt of gratitude. And another individual that, you know, comes to mind was probably the quintessential gentleman that I worked with, and that was Sir Michael Bishop. He was Michael Bishop back when I first started to work with him. He was chairman and chief executive of British Midland, which was the second largest airline in Britain after British Airways. He was so quietly spoken, but deeply, deeply passionate about that business. But more than that, I mean, a lot of people are driven and are passionate about business, but he really showed me that what was important, right, and he had such a clear understanding of it, right, what was really important was people, right, not assets, right? And believe me, as an airline, you have lots of assets, right? But he truly believed that people were the most important thing. And it was the people that you surrounded yourself with that were the true key to success. He was incredibly humble. He was, looking back on it, a true servant leader. And that was way before that term seemed to get coined, right, and became popular, right? In the, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s, people started to talk about servant leadership. But Michael was doing that way back, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, the other thing that struck me working with Michael, and then it struck me even more years later when I look back at those times, was his bravery, right? He was an openly gay man, right? When that was almost unheard of, right, in the executive suite, right, of those 80s. But he was proud of who he was, right? And of course, as the years went back, he became Sir Michael Bishop, right? He now serves in the House of Lords. He retired from British Midland some years ago, but now serves in the House of Lords. But he is now openly campaigns for gay rights. And I think back to those times in the sort of early 80s, late 70s and early 80s, and he really was an inspiration. He showed that, you know, you didn't have to be a bully, right? You could be passionate about the business without being passionate about the assets, right? He believed in people. He believed in doing the right thing. And I think, you know, as I look back, it's interesting to think just how much that man molded my view of business. And I probably didn't realize it at the time, Rick, but, you know, in retrospect, looking back, he was truly instrumental. Right? And I think, you know, the final person that I would call out, and I would be remiss not to do it, and I'm sure you probably get this a lot, was my father, right? And, you know, I learned over the years that not all fathers were like my own, right? And I am deeply moved to know that I have been so lucky to have been guided by a man like my father, right? I think, you know, when I look back, my only regret was that he passed so early, right? I was still really at the early stages of my career when he passed away. But despite that, you know, he showed me the importance of family, right? He showed me the importance that love really is the only thing that matters, right? When we can get so distracted by other things. I remember, Rick, you know, it was a time before I was married. I was very proud of it, believe me. I had a little black Mini, right? And it was truly beautiful. Long before Minis got reinvented, right? became popular again. I had one of those babies and I loved that car. And one day it didn't go. I was trying to figure out why it wasn't turning over, and I called my dad and said, "Look, you know, this is the sort of noise it makes." And said, "Well, I think," and he was an astonishing mechanic, Rick, really great with his hands. And he said, "I think it's probably you need to replace the head manifold, right? I think that's what's wrong. It's really simple." And he walked me through it. Okay, so that was easy. I took these bolts out, I lifted the head up, and there was the what I needed to remove. So I did that and put it back together again, and oh my gosh, it didn't work, right? In fact, it was probably worse. It sounded worse than it did when I began. And I called him back and said, "Dad, you know, I don't think this has worked." You know, he said, "You know what? I think that was the problem. But I probably didn't explain what you needed to do." He said, "It was really difficult. It's really difficult telling somebody what to do over the phone, right?" Hey, you got to remember, this was way before the internet, way before Zoom or anything like that, right? Before we had smartphones. He said, "Look, you know what I'm going to do? Just hang in there," right? And he put the phone down. He got in his car. He drove the 2 hours it was to get to me, right? And then he worked on that car for, I don't know, probably 10 or 12 hours and put it back together again. I think it was like 2 or 3 in the morning when he finished. And, you know, he slapped me on the back and said, "There you go." I said, I need to go back and see your mom now. And that was like 3 in the morning. So, you know, it was just unswerving devotion to what mattered most to him. And what mattered most to him was family. And, you know, that's a lesson I think we all should remember.
Wow, beautiful. Three great heroes in your life: Dad, Brian Mason, Sir Michael Bishop. All three made such a difference to create the best Paul Fox that there is. And I love the story of your dad. And boy, talk about unconditional love to come over and work on a car for 10 or 12 hours. That is an amazing story.
It was an amazing car, though, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
One that you love. You had this great career at Procter. I know that there's lots of accomplishments, but I'd love to know, in retrospect, what you may consider as one of your proudest accomplishments. But before you do that, I've interviewed so many Procter alum, and I've learned over the course of time the value of how they've all communicated and how I was taught to write that perfect one-page memo. And there's a couple of words that come out of the world of communication from our old company. Two words: improve lives. Another one: sponsor moms. I mean, it's there's an art to the words, to the minimal words that we use to economize the language and say the most with the fewest. So in is that part of your greatest accomplishment, that you helped shape the world of communication at our old company?
Oh, I think Procter had a long, long tradition of growing and attracting some of the world's best communicators. You know, I'm truly honored to be considered to be part of that, right? But I think, you know, when I look back, I think the company truly embraced the power of communication. It recognized that, you know, to touch, if you remember the other half of that, you know, improve lives, the other part of it was touching, right? Touching and improving lives.
And that's right.
And I think the company really did embrace that to touch lives was such a multidimensional idea that, of course, we can touch lives through our actions and through our words, right? And I think the company always understood the power that communications had and really excelled in that, right? Truly excelled. And, you know, being part of that team, and we had so many just outstanding communicators, not just in the United States, but across the world, really. And to be part of that family was really, really quite exceptional.
Thanks for sharing that. You know, you have gone through a position within one of the greatest companies in the world, leading the whole role of communications and managing various stakeholders, from consumers to shareholders to colleagues, retailers, customers, and all that. It's not an easy job. What advice would you give to other leaders that are currently in that role within their organization?
Well, I think there are a number of things. You know, when I think about, in some respects, both my proudest achievements, I think, as well as the advice that I would give people who are either, you know, beginning a career in communications or leading a communications organization, is that, you know, remember, the most important role that you have is to grow the talent around you. You know, back when I first joined Procter in 2005, after the merger with Gillette, AG, who was CEO at the time, he called me, and I went up to that 11th floor and sat with him for a while, and you know, he gave me some advice about what life would be like now, you know, walking through that, you know, central and tower buildings, you know, and you know, he said to me, look, you know, if you want to progress in this company, if you want to grow, then you won't be able to do that unless you grow the talent to replace you. Because I'm not going to move you unless I know full well that there is somebody going to step into your shoes that's going to be as good, if not better, than you are. And so, you know, with that advice, you know, literally ringing in my ears, I realized that you're absolutely right, right? And, you know, I committed a lot of my, you know, life to trying to find and grow the best talent. And, you know, I would say that to my colleagues, that, you know, as they sit on top of their communications organizations or they're pursuing a career and growing a career in communication, again, you know, it is grow that talent around you, right? You know, when I look back now, some of the very junior people I identified and saw that they really have a spark and a talent and a passion for it. Now, today, those individuals are, you know, many of them are still at P&G, and they have positions of significant seniority and authority. And, you know, that makes me incredibly proud. Right? The other, you know, when I think about the other thing is, you know, when you think about all the stakeholders that as a communicator that you have to juggle, right? Whether it's investors, customers, retailers, consumers, government entities, advocates, critics, right? So all of these stakeholders that you have out there, and it's our role to ensure that those, we form a relationship, right? We form a relationship with them so we understand what they want from us as a business, how we can potentially meet those needs, how we can potentially mitigate the harm that can be created to the company. You really do need to walk, as they say, you need to walk a mile in their shoes, right? You have to understand where they come from, because if you're really going to succeed in what we do, you've got to be able to see, you know, from every angle. So walk a mile in their shoes so you better understand where these individuals are coming from and what drives them, right? As a communicator, you know, I have always believed that there is a inherent danger in becoming too inwardly focused, right? That's very easy when you're working for a business that you focus on really what's immediately around you. And, you know, one of our roles as communicators, and a key role as a communicator, is to bring that outside in, right? To bring those outside perspectives. What are people thinking about us, right? And make sure that's understood by the senior executive group, because sometimes they too can lose sight, right, on what is happening outside the four walls. So, you know, and finally, Rick, never lose your sense of humor, right? We can all get incredibly serious about what we do and why we do it, but at the end of the day, you know, we are communicators, and things aren't going to go right. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but don't ever lose that sense of humor, because you got to be able to laugh, right? You got to go to home. You got to go smile. So right. You know, those are some things that I would think about to my colleagues out there that are either beginning or leading communications activities.
That's fantastic. You just mentored a world of people that lead communication departments. I appreciate that. And throughout this entire show, as we wrap this up with Paul Fox, Paul probably just mentioned 25 things that he would advise himself as a 20-year-old, but maybe you can encapsulate all that for us, Paul, by giving maybe some singular advice you would give to your 20-year-old self, now looking back in the rearview mirror as the wonderful professor that you are today. What advice would you give yourself?
Well, I think, you know, that young and ambitious 20-year-old, I'd probably have to sit down with him for fair length of time, Rick, and giving some perspectives. But, you know, when I think back on it, you know, I would probably tell myself, you know, Paul, you can't be right all the time, right? And, you know, as a young 20-year-old, you just feel like you're invincible, right? That you know everything, that you know absolutely everything the world has to give, and there can't possibly be something that you could get wrong. But I think a word in my ear back then would be, you know what, you're going to get things wrong, kid. And it's okay. You can't be right every time. You know, learn from those mistakes. In fact, you learn way more from mistakes than you ever do from success. Just don't make too many mistakes, right, or else that might be something totally different. But be humble, right, you know, because you can't be right all the time. Learn from those most mistakes. And, you know, the other thing, I think when you look back, I'm very fortunate to have many friends that are still around, right? But, you know, those that matter most to us, right, they're not immortal, right? And at some point, we will lose each other, right? And just remember that and treasure every moment with those individuals. You know, don't make excuses as to why you can't go see somebody or do something with somebody, because one day you won't be able to do that, right? And, you know, as I think back to being a 20-year-old, that would be some humbling advice I would give myself. Say, you know, yeah, you're in a hurry, kid. Right? You want to achieve some great things. You want to go places. But let's not forget the people that are around you right now, and just spend some quality time with them, because they're not going to be around forever.
Wow. That's powerful, Paul. Thank you so much for sharing that and for sharing your wisdom today. And where can our listeners contact you regarding your various enterprises?
They can always reach me at Paul Fox, P-A-U-L-F-O-X, at Derdale, that's D-E-R-D-A-L-E, consulting.com. That's my consulting business. You can always reach me there. Happy to hear from all friends and new friends. If there's anything I can do, you know that I'd be very happy to help anybody.
I appreciate that, Paul. And one final thing, Paul and I were talking before the show about if you happen to have worked at Procter & Gamble and are not a part of the alumni network, we really urge you to go to pgalums.com and reach out and join a local chapter. You would be surprised at the value that being a part of our alumni network could bring to you. So check it out. You want to add to that, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. pgalums.com. We'd love to hear from you. We're all, hey, at the end of the day, you know, we're all P&Gers, right? We all have a passion to make a difference. We all want to help the communities that we call home. And, you know, as former P&Gers, as alums, we still carry that passion forward. And if you're interested in doing that, then please join the P&G Alumni Network. We have chapters throughout the world. I'll guarantee that there's probably one not so very far from where our listeners are right now. So all I would say is, you know, please reach out, join them, be safe, be healthy. And it's been great talking to you, Rick. It really has.
Well, likewise, we'd love to have you back on again next year to give us a State of the Union address on communications from your perspective. Hopefully once we're past this coronavirus and it's a new day. And we'd love talking to you, Paul. Thank you for your perspective. And in particular, I really enjoyed hearing about Brian Mason, Sir Michael Bishop, and your dad. Three powerful mentors. So I'm going to send this show out to lots of my friends today and tell them to go call their dad to thank them, because I think it was that powerful of a story.
Well, thank you, Rick, and it's been a lot of fun talking to you.
You bet. That was Paul Fox. We appreciate him joining us today on our Success Made to Last show. Wow, great stories there. And isn't it interesting how one can start out from the background of coming from a household of teachers and family who are teachers, and he goes through a brilliant career through government and corporations and through Procter & Gamble, and is now circled right back to being a visiting fellow at the University of Oxford. That's amazing. We appreciate him being on. And hey, thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones, for their great long-term support of this network. When it's time for investments to feel individual, it's time to go to Edward Jones. Our guy is Serban Marasini. You can contact him at serban.marasine at edwardjones.com today to get a real individual personal touch to helping you develop your goals, your financial goals for your future. I'm Rick Tokini. Thanks for joining us on the show. As we always say, may you live the best version of you. Have a great week.
This show is brought to you by Success Made to Last. Success Made to Last is a multimedia company with a focus on you and releasing your full potential. If you want to find out more information about all the programs associated with this company, go to successmadetolast.com.